welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we get to two indie games, but not this week, and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
I'm Gary Butterfield. We did two halves of one indie game.
Yeah, basically. By that, I mean that this week we're doing Wasteland 2, just Wasteland 2.
Yeah, that's our first of a couple full-length episodes for us, which means, you know, like 25 minutes. But yeah, and people who listened to the last episode know that we did that kind of special time-filling one because we couldn't, it would be really difficult to do this along with another game.
Yes.
This is a huge, 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 huge game. Yeah, one that we are both really, really looking forward to.
Yes.
As well. Nick has the Wasteland 2 Desert Ranger belt buckle.
Yeah.
And he wears
rocking that for a year now.
Yep. So Nick, what is, tell me about Wasteland 2.
Okay, so Wasteland 2. It is a CRPG in a post-nuclear, post-apocalyptic setting made by In Exile Entertainment, which is Brian Fargo's new company. And Brian Fargo was the main guy behind the original Wasteland back in 88. And also he was one of the names on Fallout, although not really the main guy to Fallout, and the original Bard's Tale as well. And it was... it was first announced on a Kickstarter campaign in October of 2013. No, wait, that was the original release date.
2012.
Yeah, 2012. And then came out September 19th, 2014.
Yeah, so just it's still relatively new. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like we were kind of behind, but this game's only been out for 2 months, and, you know, beating however long this is, it's not so bad.
I felt
a little bit bad about it, but it's not that bad. yeah, and it is, you know, for people who are maybe not familiar... who only know the Fallout games from their 3D Bethesda entries. Mm-hmm. Before that, they were crunchy as hell over the head, you know, over the head. I got confused with over the shoulder. Overhead, you know, kind of tactical RPGs that, you know, in my mind are a lot, like, I like the later Fallouts. I think that the first two are the strongest entries in the series, though. I think they're kind of written better and they're more interesting.
Likewise.
And before that, Wasteland was kind of the progenitor to that. And they were trying to make a Wasteland 2, couldn't get the rights, and instead made Fallout.
Correct.
So that's where Fallout came from. And then, you know, so there's all this, the whole story of Wasteland 2 is kind of this weird one of compromises. So, like, you know, Fallout was made because they couldn't get the rights to Wasteland 2. And then this is kind of what we have instead of Fallout 3.
Yeah.
In a weird way, instead of Van Buren. Which was the original, like, old kind of 3D overhead that they're going to make.
Yeah.
And you know, that content's not gone. Like, a lot of those ideas got recycled into New Vegas, you know, for the better, because New Vegas is great.
New Vegas,
but, excellent. Yeah, New Vegas is very, very good. But it was nice to be able to go back to that old kind of style. And this is part of that nostalgia wave of Kickstarter with... Project Eternity and Tides of Numenera and Shadow and Returns, where it's like, hey, you know, we can't make a huge budget retail version of these games that are really niche, but, you know, there's a market out there. If you are that market, pay for this game and we'll make it. And it's like, this is up there with, like, Broken Age and that kind of Kickstarter boom.
Exactly. And for some reason CRPGs were the kind of main, like, obviously, Broken Age is an adventure game, which is another sort of game that, or a genre that's lost its mass appeal. So they kind of had to reach to the smaller markets in order to get it made. But CRPGs, after Broken Age was funded, kind of just took the limelight. And since then, the main games I'm looking forward to that had Kickstarters behind them, besides Barkley 2, are all CRPGs.
Yeah, which is technically a computer role-playing game, even if it's not in genre.
Right.
It is the it's been a real exciting time to be me, as far as video games go, between this and then Divinity and then Isaac, which we will talk about at length. Just you wait. And so this is really up my wheelhouse. Like, I love all those games. I do the blog on, you know, that engine.
Right.
I have games that are a really big fan. So how did Wasteland 2 hold up for you? Your expectations or not meet them, as it were.
I really enjoyed Wasteland 2. I basically, as soon as it came out, kind of pumped all the time I could into it and beat it relatively quickly. So I obviously really like it. And I think that comes with, like, both my explanation for that and the caveat to that are it's a very true to form old school CRPG.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is both those things at the same time, because it is incredibly true to form. And if you've played any of those CRPGs, especially, you know, back when they were released in their early states before all the patches and fan patches came out after the fact, this takes very few sort of modern glances at where video games have come in the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, not at all. Like, it's even, it's kind of interesting. Like, the some of the interface stuff is actually a little bit more primitive than things that came way before it.
Yeah.
Like, a really common complaint about this is how cumbersome it is to use a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how many clicks it is. And it reminded me, like, I went back and when I first started playing this, went back and played a little bit of Fallout 1 because I wanted to just remind myself of what that felt like to use a skill.
Right.
And it's like a right-click drag down.
Yeah.
Like, it's super easy. Like, it is a one-click thing where now, you know, like, there's a lot of that stuff that's, like, that under the general banner of polish that this game doesn't have, which is fine. Like, small team, relatively small budget. Super niche project. Like, I don't blame it for that. And it's like, it's not, like, it's excellent. It's very good. It is just not, you just have to, like, you put it really well, where, like, if you have a tolerance for that stuff back then, don't expect this to be that with the edges sanded off.
Correct.
Like, this is more of that.
Which, you know, Shadowrun Returns kind of did a modern CRPG. I think that is the best example of how to do, like, a, you know, isometric overhead, over the head. CRPG, play Dragonfall. Like, if you want to see what a CRPG would look like nowadays with maintaining, you know, not bringing any of the sort of Bethesda FPS tweaks to it, then that's what you're going to get from Dragonfall. This is Nostalgia Trip 101.
Yeah, totally. Like, this is, so Dragonfall, like, I think is probably the most successful Kickstarter game I played. That and, like, Shovel Knight, I guess, is a Kickstarter game as well. I wasn't aware of that when it was on Kickstarter.
Right.
But Dragonfall is like 100%. Like, that's really, really good. But it's also a, like, 12-hour, you know, takes place in one location, limited number of characters. Like, it is a much more modest thing.
Yes.
This is trying to capture that crazy Fallout 2 feeling of, like, hey, this is a whole huge world with, like, lots of people living in it. And what would these, you know, it didn't have an established fiction to work from. Like, one of the things about Shadowrun is that I was thinking about when I was comparing Dragonfall and this is that, like, oh, there's novels upon novels of Shadowrun.
Yeah, Shadowrun never stopped. The games weren't around, but the universe has been going for the past 30 years. So
right, whereas, like, Wasteland, you know, it had Wasteland 1 and then Fallout, which is different, and, like, this controls like Fallout and looks a little bit like Fallout, but there's a lot of, like, the goofy nuclear stuff that is not part of this, so it can't really do Fallout lore.
Right.
It had to build all that stuff up from the ground up. So it's a wider project, which is why I think you get those cracks, and just much longer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a really long game. This is by far the longest game we've done for the show.
Oh, by far, yeah.
I mean, I'm still, like, I probably, like, 3/4 of the way through Divinity, which I'll end up beating. I don't know which one will end up being longer in the end.
Right.
But they're, like, this is the longest game we've completed for the show by far.
Right. Yeah. Our Divinity, you know, was very much a touch because I didn't have the time to commit to it. I was actually playing Wasteland 2 at the time. So so I put 62 hours into Wasteland 2 from start to completion according to Steam.
Yeah, I've got 54, and I know at least a couple areas which we'll talk about in the spoiler section that, like, I either accidentally skipped or ended up doing, like, a really expeditious way through, sometimes by choice and sometimes because of some of that lack of polish, like some broken quest flagging and stuff.
Right.
But, like, just basically, like, so this is, if you've never played any of those games, like, it is a lot like Baldur's Gate or something like that, or Divinity, but much more tactical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, much more about combat. You can set ambushes, which is super cool. That's, like, a really cool mechanic.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit more, like, your guys don't have powers or feats or spells or anything, so it's a lot more of, like, kind of gun fetishization.
Yes.
And kind of specialization. So
it's definitely all that. So, like, you're right. All you have really is melee weapons, which come in a few flavors, and guns, which come in a multitude of flavors. And that is how you play the game. And then everyone, you kind of have to spread out your skills throughout the party because it's very skills heavy. essentially everything outside of combat is going to be a skill check of some sort.
Yeah.
Because they definitely emphasize skills over, like, dialogue choices, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that you can talk your way out of things, and that's something that I don't think the game did great.
Right.
Because this is kind of a larger discussion with the skills thing, is where so many of the skills boil down to different kinds of locks. Mm-hmm. Like, there's 3 dialogue locks and 3 physical locks.
Yep.
Like, there's a separate skill for lockpicking and combination lockpicking.
Yep.
Which I think is bonkers.
Yeah, that is bonkers.
Like, that's really dumb. And then, like, conversation-wise, like, I just didn't have enough points to make. And, I get it. They're making you make a choice so you can't do everything. And when we did the Watch Out for Fireballs on Fallout 2, I think we were talking about how, like, if you're a completionist, it can drive you crazy. But it's not really a problem if you have to, if a situation comes along and you can't do every solution to it because of your build, mm-hmm. that's not a fault in the game.
Right.
As long as it's giving you a way to get through it with how you played before, it's fine. You want to be able to do everything because this game, it gets a little frustrating though, where like I had one guy who had one of the speech skills and I would complete a check with it. And then another totally different speech skill would be the second part of that like, solving that quest nonviolently. And right. if I couldn't do that, like I couldn't advance it. So it's like, you gave me half of it.
You did miss a core mechanic there, though, which is you can just swap characters in the middle of dialogue.
Oh, no, I just didn't want to make 3 of my guys...
Oh, right, have dialogue skills.
Because I also had 3 guys doing locks, like, between...
Yeah, exactly. You have to have all 3 of them in order to get past some stuff. So if you didn't level up all 3 of them, you're going to be in a rut if you're trying to be a completionist. Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, I figured, like, my guy was, like, a smartass, so it's like... Certain situations I'll be able to talk my way through, certain ones I won't. But there's some of them I could talk my way through the first half, and but you need to have a smart ass, and then I have to totally change tactics.
Yep.
And that was a little bit, a little bit frustrating. The same way that, like, I would get a little frustrated that locks, you get to something where it'd be trapped and locked.
Right.
Or there'd be a fence with a combination lock, and inside is a chest with a regular lock.
Right.
Yep. So just, like, so many different kinds of locks and lockpicking skills where there's a lot of redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
There that I think is like kind of not as successful at what they were trying to do as some of their like inspirations.
Yeah. So I'm going to make a quick little caveat, which is that we're going to be saying a lot of negative things because we have a lot of back sort of games to compare this to. The game itself in general is we both highly recommend.
Right? It's like, really good.
It's a very good game. So when we are bitching and moaning, it's being very nitpicky because we have a lot of history with the games that came before this, and so we have a lot to compare it to, and that's the topic of discussion for most of what we're going to be able to say. So
you can't be criticize something without being disappointed in it.
Right.
Like, if you have no expectations, then you would just be like, well, whatever. Yeah. The only reason why we care about it is because we had expectations for it, and it doesn't mean that, like, on the balance, like, I like a flawed game.
Mm-hmm.
Fallout 2 is really buggy.
Right.
And that kind of, there's DNA in that with like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, which is a total mess, but it's like an awesome, awesome game.
Yeah.
So this is still like, will come down and be like one of my favorite games I played this year. If this wasn't like one of the best years for games in my memory, then like this would probably be up there.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that this year has been so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even still, I think it's probably made my top 5 or something.
So. Yeah, it's still very good. And, like, there's a lot of good stuff, too. Like, the combat does feel really good. Like, mm-hmm. the ambush mechanic is really excellent. You kind of trade out some of your character building since you're building a party. Unlike a Fallout, when you make one guy and you just have to meet people and they're kind of set.
Right.
You make 4 guys in this, so... some of that, like having to cover a lot of bases, is covered by the fact that you have a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
and you can choose skills to kind of like complement each other. Like, if I had a character who I knew was going to be mobile, and was going to be kind of in the back lines, like I had a sniper, or I ended up having like ending the game with a couple snipers, and they were going to be at the back lines, near where we started out, and then we're going to have to reposition a lot. So I made those guys my medics.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the guys who were my melee guys, I would make them give them all my grenades because they're going to take them a little while to get into range. And if by the end, so you kind of create these like long-term pre-battle tactical decisions that really matter. Yeah. It's really satisfying when you get stumble across something that works.
Yeah, the fighting is really crunchy. It's really good. You know, they obviously drove a higher emphasis on fighting than maybe even the Fallouts that it's kind of being a sequel to. Mm-hmm. But they did pretty well with it. Like the fighting feels really good, even if there's a lot of it in comparison.
Yeah, it's real battle-y. So it's like if you don't like the writing in this game is good. The choices are good, but you're going to spend most of your time fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there are, I think you couldn't do a pacifist run of this game.
No,
you couldn't. Right. Unlike Fallout. So, like, if you like that choice stuff and you like the writing, but you don't like this kind of combat engine, I don't think you're going to like the game.
Right.
You have to like the combat engine, which, like, I love. Like, I like getting into, especially in the second half of this game, we'll talk about it more in the spoiler space, but I end up being outgunned more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
And having to, like, you know, barely scraping by because I'm picking a fight where maybe I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
Is like a really fun thing for me in these games.
Yeah, I agree. And it's all entirely possible if you tactically play it outright.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that actually makes a difference is a huge deal. You know, that no combat in this game is going to be a cakewalk if you're, you know, just playing it through. It's, you know, it's not a game where you have the ability or want to go power level yourself, so you're going to be running into combat all the time that you have to play strategically or you're going to fall.
And it's really hard. Like the,
yeah.
the game is really difficult in a really satisfying way. Like I love until like eventually you always get in an RPG. There's like there should be a name for it, but like the money is no object event horizon.
Yes.
Where it's like, yeah. Oh, I have more money than I can ever spend in my entire year. Like,
right.
But initially, when you're just like scraping for bullets, awesome. Like, there's such a good moment early on, and it's not really a spoiler, but like where I was in an area in a town and I was super low on ammo and was tempted to dig up graves for ammo, which is like, it was crazy. And then like, I didn't end up not doing it. I found another way around it. But like, initially, when you're kind of getting hounded by, you know, random encounters, or they're eating out, like, ammo is very scarce.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel really desperate. Like, this is, like, a really harsh world, and they do a good job of, like, portraying that through the mechanics.
Yeah, I had a very similar problem with one of the first areas where, you know, not knowing the game, I wasn't sure how far through the area I was, how many encounters I had left, and I was, like, two of my characters were dead out of ammo, and I couldn't find any. So
yeah.
Like, can I make it through these next battles? Like literally sub two people. I don't know if this is even possible. And luckily, I was close enough to the end. Like, they somehow managed to either I just got the most perfect playthrough ever, or they somehow spaced ammo perfectly in this level that I ran out right
yeah.
as the last, like nearly ran out right as the last combat was happening. And that's awesome.
I feel like it probably wasn't spaced out because like so much of the treasure is random.
Yeah,
like I think you just had like a really good combination of like luck and then making the right choices in the actual battles, which is still cool. Like just
yeah.
barely making it is a really good feeling, and that happens a lot in this game.
For sure,
feels
yeah.
like, and that happened also in Dragonfall. Like that was a really good, like the harder battles in Dragonfall were like, this is really touch and go, and that's a really, you know, that's a mark of good difficulty.
Yep,
I think. And then just, so we're going to spend a lot of time on the story section and spoiler section, and some mechanical things
mm-hmm.
will come out in that. Like, we both recommend you play the game, but if you're definitely not going to play it and you're listening to this as a vicarious way of playing the game, even if you don't care about the plot, we're going to talk about mechanic stuff
yeah.
in the second half as it comes up.
Yep. Which is, you know, I think we're probably at a good time for that
yeah.
if that's agreeable to you. So, so, you know. Stop listening after these little beats here. If you want to play this game and haven't yet and don't want to be spoiled for any of the ending stuff, because it is a story-heavy game and we don't want to spoil any of that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But first, a little bit of admin stuff.
Yeah, like probably the biggest thing in a week from when this comes out, we'll be doing DuckStream.
Yes.
Our charity live stream. So November 21st to 22nd, if you go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream, you can find all the details. We're between the two kind of branches of the pod network, we're streaming for 24 hours for Transactive Gender Center.
Yes.
So it's going to be super cool.
It is going to be super cool. So 6 p.m. PST is when we're starting on Portland side on the 21st,
mm-hmm.
which is Friday. And it's going to be me, Gary, and Brayton, hanging out on the couch, playing some co-op games. Gary's going to do a speedrun of Dark Souls 1. It's going to be a lot of fun. So come hang with us. We're going to be in Twitch chat all day while we're streaming for 12 hours straight all night.
Yeah, stay up with us.
Yeah.
Stay
we'll
up
need
until
the company,
six.
For sure.
Yeah. Watch us drink an unhealthy amount of, like, probably, like, you know, Monster Zeros.
Yep.
I actually will probably stick to coffee just so I don't,
yeah.
You know.
I've got a coffee pot. We'll make sure it's full.
Yeah. That'll be great. And then after that, Cole and the Cincinnati boy and the Cincy boys are doing. So Cole's going to play Haunting Ground, which is a really cool survival horror game if you've never heard of it. Like, you are a lady in a mansion and you can only hide from the enemy and you have a dog that protects you. But there's a mechanic of how well you treat the dog and how well it protects you. Haunting Ground rules. Like, and it is obtuse and weird and hard to find. So watching Cole play it is probably a good way to experience it. And then he's going to do some co-op stuff with the other guys from the level. So yeah. And so if you go to that page again, that's ducky.tv/chuckstream, there's a donation button, use it often and early, and yeah.
Yep. So other than that, you know, we're on our usual social media stuff, twitter.com/comradepodcast or @comradepodcast, however you like to do your twittering, and on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade. That's where you can interact with us. You can also submit your comments and recommendations for indie games for us to play on duckfeed.tv/contact. Use Check It Out Comrade from the dropdown. We'll get a hold of those and possibly check out what you're going to recommend. Actually, we'll almost definitely check it out. We may not cover it on the show, but we'll definitely we like looking at new games. So
yeah, and we might end up checking it out way later.
Yeah.
So yeah, and so yeah, so if you're interested or if you're averse to Wasteland 2 spoilers, stop listening now. All right.
Okay.
How come every single time, like, if there's ever a settlement that seems too good to be true, they're always eating people? Like, that's never not happened. It's happening in the tabletop game we're playing in real life.
Yep.
In our game of Deadlands. It happens everywhere. Like, if somebody seems nice, they're eating people. No matter what.
Was it the White Glove Society or something in
New
Vegas?
Yeah, New Vegas White Glove Society. The Mannerites here, and it's like, oh, mm-hmm. They're polite, and he dresses like Colonel Sanders. They're eating people.
Yep.
It's 100% true.
Yep. Well, I mean, let me start off just with a general sort of plot, or not plot, but, you know, beginning situation definition. So, Wasteland 2, post-apocalyptic. You know all the tropes. You are some new recruits into the Desert Rangers, which are a group of protectors in the post-apocalypse in Arizona. So essentially their whole role is when someone needs help, when there's, you know, bad groups masquerading around or marauding around. Masquerade was not the right word at all. Marauding around. You know, they're going to balls. And,
yeah.
But you know, they call on the Rangers, and they send a troop out, and the troop goes and helps them out, and it's all for the good of the community. So you play definite good guys in this one, which is distinctively different from Fallout.
You're cops.
Yeah, you are cops. You are the cops of the post-apocalypse. And basically the whole beginning plot device is just that a Ranger was down while they were trying to set up these radio
signal boosters, yeah.
Yeah, they're basically signal boosters so that they could triangulate these strange messages that they're hearing, try to actually tune in on them harder and actually find their position. And that's basically the whole beginning half of the game, is trying to locate radio towers, help out all your little buddies of the post-apocalypse with their issues, which enables you to get to their radio towers, and figure out what's going on with these signals.
Yeah, thematically, there's a huge emphasis on communications,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the future, like that being a source of power.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the so that set up the kind of the startup thing. And you just uncover this plot that these radio broadcasts are this crazy transhumanist
mm-hmm.
guy who's broadcasting. And there's a whole lot of kind of like military-esque kind of Semper Fi, like, we lost one of our own.
Yeah.
You know, kind of things, especially like Angela, who comes along with you, who is kind of implied to be romantically involved with the person who died and everything. And that's where a lot of the kind of gravitas comes initially. But really, you're kind of led on this trail of breadcrumbs for this radio signal just to check out these communities.
Yes.
Which is like super interesting, like after the first couple. I feel like they get like there are more interesting communities, like they have kind of themes to them. And that's a Fallout thing where they have these kind of like cargo cult stuff that's opened up. So like somebody will kind of base their whole society after some weird little bit of ephemera.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's and you know, that's sort of a plot device they use a couple, you know, multiple times, but to widely diverse themes. So you know, that some of them may be all about, you know, train tracks and the ability to move stuff around via trains, and so that's their whole being. But, you know, some others might be a crazy church that built out a cathedral in Hollywood, and like, so they're all very thematic little communities that you explore.
And the train community, like they worship it. Like it's not just like they're like, oh, you know, we're a rail based society. Like, oh, this to them is like a god. Like they talk about John Henry.
Yeah.
You know, which is like, that's the kind of stuff that you're looking for. And that's the cool stuff that you're being kind of led along with. There's a really, initially there's a real, it does that kind of branching beginning instead of branching ending thing, similar to like Dragon Age Origins, I guess. And we both did different things where they're presented with a choice. And I feel like this is kind of a thesis that the game only kind of carries out, where like you're supposed to be making these hard choices.
Right.
You don't do that very much, actually. But initially, like, it's really hard because there's two groups, one that is primarily responsible for food and one that's primarily responsible for water, that are in trouble. Mm-hmm. And you can only choose one. And what's kind of cool is, like, whatever one you choose, you hear the other one over the radio, like, kind of damning you and...
getting ransacked.
And, just totally getting wrecked. And, like, your reputation is really important, too. Like, that's part of your stated mission is to, like, you know, make the people in the Waste trust and like the Rangers.
Right. Yep. So right off the bat, you're kind of forced into choosing one or the other. Which I think, you know, if they were planning on leaving it at like that the entire time, it was meant to sort of emphasize the fact that you're not going to be able to do everything in one game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true, but then they also kind of flub up, like you said in the beginning half of the episode, where, you know, some things will. They want you to specialize and therefore have to ignore things you don't have the skills for, but there's not enough content overall for that to feel rewarding.
Yeah. And sometimes what happens in those situations is you can't get out of something other than just kind of like, I know, and this happens specifically, they're almost entirely in LA. But what's like, I know this guy's a bad guy. There is a quest flag to find out more about them, but I don't have the skill for it. So I'm just going to go in and kill them because I know they're a bad guy and I know they're doing this bad stuff, you know,
but
and that's it. And just ends up being a combat.
Really fill, yeah. That doesn't really fill the entire quest line. So you don't get to do all of the cool, you know, skill-based exploring and detective work and stuff that they built in.
Yeah. Like I try to, but like the first step is cut off to me because I took smart ass instead of hard ass.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Like my ass was wrong. Is the other one sweet ass? What's the
it's
other one?
Kiss ass. Yeah.
Kiss ass. Yeah, I know they're all ass skills.
Yep.
Yeah.
So since I didn't do Hypool and you didn't do Ag Center, let's talk a little bit about those. So of the two choices you have at the beginning, you have to choose between Hypool and Ag Center. I did Ag Center, which is the agricultural center where basically the only kind of scientists that still exist are all researching plant life in the wastes in order to keep an abundant supply of food going. And essentially some research goes wrong and plants start coming to life and also taking over. You know, life, obviously they're plants, but they start becoming aggressive and having a wanting to eat flesh. And also spores will infect people and those people become pod people and will start hunting down other regular people. So basically the plant version of zombies.
Yeah.
And you get a cool scientist NPC named Rose, who's really awesome. And then you go defeat all the scourge of plant stuff. And it turns out that it was all set up by this guy who was purposely trying to spread bad genes, I guess. I don't know what his whole deal was, but
was he connected to the Matthias or what have you?
No, I don't think he was a Matthias guy. Huh. I think he's just some psycho who was part of the Ag Center who he was just a disgruntled employee or something. It wasn't a very good it wasn't a very good plot device for why he wanted to do it, but you had to kill him and put a version of the spores that would defeat all the others or something back through all the water supply and stuff to stop the spread of the bad juju.
Yeah, and that's interesting because when you do the other one, you do kind of a part of that anyway. Like, because the spore is still infected surrounding farms and stuff for me, and I still went and got the cure and would go and heal these farms and stuff, but I couldn't do the whole dungeon and I couldn't save Ag Center. Like, Ag Center was lost.
Huh.
But everywhere else, I still had a lot of quests that involved it. Primarily, I think the big difference is just, like, what ending you're going to get, kind of what help you get at the end.
Yeah.
And then what NPC you get.
Correct. Yeah.
So if you do the other one, if you do Hypool is just being attacked by raiders, mm-hmm. So it's a little bit less interesting than, like, killer plants. But you just go in and fight off the raiders, and then there is, inside Hypool, there is a mayoral race, or, like, a political race, and there's kind of two candidates, one of which is, like, the hard law candidate, and the other one being the kind of, like, the, you know, softier one.
Gotcha.
And you essentially choose who to back, and you help that person out. And you do this really bad, boring dungeon early on that I did not like, going through these water tunnels.
Oh yeah.
Where, like, the it had this, like, you could only, so if so, like, you could light up areas, you had to leave somebody behind to operate this, like, switchboard of areas,
mm-hmm.
to light up where you're at. But combat still included that person, so, like, whenever you were in a fight, you'd have to, like, skip past their turn every time,
right?
Which was obnoxious, and it just didn't end. Like, it just went on for a very long time.
Yeah.
But the actual other side quests and stuff in there are cool, and the NPC you get, was named Walter's Cry, who is a Native American lady. Turned out, like, she didn't impress me that much early on, and then eventually I grew to, you know, really depend on her. She ended up being my ace sniper.
Yeah.
And then also had, like, outdoorsman and animal empathy. So she could, you know, when those things came up, she could help out.
Yeah. Those are cool too. The rose you get has a like, mechanical arm from a guy that you meet in a later area.
Mm-hmm.
He's at the Titan's Pass.
Okay.
That doctor that you meet who won't actually, did you say you, like, flubbed up that being able to talk to him or something?
The doctor wouldn't know. I was able to talk to the doctor in Titan's Pass, and they told me, I was like, how do I get an arm? And she's like, well, you know, I'll give you some information on it, but you wouldn't do it for me.
Yeah, exactly. They won't. Yeah. She doesn't operate on raider or on rangers for some reason. Like, she has some beef with desert rangers and won't operate on them.
Yeah, I never completed that though. Like, wherever that was leading me to, like, it was leading me to another place. I never actually got to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that was leading. Yeah. I forget.
The part of that I flubbed up, or the part that, like, got flubbed with Titan Canyon, was getting into, because I didn't want it, so that, like, a lot of the areas do have, like, kind of two factions,
mm-hmm.
and this one has, like, these guys who worship this atomic bomb, which I thought was a little bit, like, that's a cool idea, but also it straight up was just in Fallout 3. you know, like, there is a town of people who worship an atomic bomb.
Yeah, make it sound. It's the first area you go to.
Yeah, like, okay. But it's them, you know, versus these militia members who want to do kind of hard law, and, like, the moral choice is, like, the monks, as long as somebody has paid the toll, they'll protect them,
mm-hmm.
and you can't attack someone who's paid the toll, even if they're extorting you, which I just thought was stupid, and I was like, I can't go along with that, like,
yeah.
So I want to join these other guys, even though they look paramilitary and scary, but I just couldn't get into, it was one of those skill things where, like, I just didn't have the skills to get into their base,
right,
to talk to them, and it was really frustrating. So I just ended up, like, going and doing the next area until I had enough levels to go back and then do the area I just gone through.
Right,
You know, so it's just kind of like, you know, this, and that map is endless. Like, the canyon map just is, like, we have to collect, like, there's a lot of, like, go collect 5 of these things. Search the corners of this map.
Yeah, that one is pretty lame.
Yeah. Like, there's cool stuff that happens in it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it is, some of the, like, the collectathon quests are not very fun, and that happens more in the second half of the game than the first half.
I do kind of like the design of the mad monks though, because like Mad Monks is just the nickname everyone else gives them, and Mad stands for Mutually Assured Destruction.
Yeah.
Because they are the gatekeepers to Titan's Pass. Like you said, you have to like essentially get them to give you a monk to carry you through, and that monk won't allow you to fight anyone else with a monk.
And that monk will immediately go and get killed by a honey badger, like as soon as possible.
Yeah.
So fuck me, I guess.
But like their whole thing is they're all just suicide bombers. Like
yeah.
All of the monks, if anything goes against sort of the church's law, then they just kill themselves with a dirty bomb, taking everyone else out in the process.
Yeah.
And that's how they keep the peace, is by killing everyone who's
we don't value our life. So
yeah.
you know, be damn sure we don't value yours. Like
yeah.
It's pretty cool. Like they are pretty cool. So we'll talk about like the kind of the big twist that happens.
Mm-hmm.
You set up all the radio towers that you need to, and you head over to another area, or there's another team that's sent over here, sent this kind of surrogate character, Angela, who is really powerful, and you grow to like her because she has a lot of personality and she's a real crutch for you. And then she is sent and their helicopter gets shot down. And so you think, oh, okay, it's the second half of the map. I'm going to go to this other base. And when you get there, the helicopter, then there's like two survivors, and they're all being attacked by these dogs, and you have to kind of rebuild a ranger center in this new area in LA.
Yep.
Which is cool. But then there ends up doing these, like, the whole second half of the game is really weirdly structured, where like I feel like the settlements are much more interesting, but the gating and everything is a lot more noticeable.
Yeah, I feel like they rushed the second half. Like,
yeah.
they had really good, because they basically designed all of the people, you know, what was going to generally happen before development on the actual game was real going strong. And I think they spent too much time on Arizona and ended up not having quite enough time on California to flesh it out.
Yeah, yeah. Or enough time to like make the quest and stuff flesh out, because like
right.
The actual areas are neat. Like they're imaginative, you know. It's just that the, you know, like this was broken quest things. Like I would, you know, there is you end up going to Hollywood at some point, and like Hollywood is this town where like it's still kind of the center of vice, and they're under constant. You know, when you get there, you start hearing these radio broadcasts, and you feel like it's setting up bosses for you. Like there's three factions, like the God's Militia, or four, I guess, the God's Militia, the Mannerites, Dugan's workers, or mm-hmm. like they want to kill everybody and make them all androids, and children of the I keep on saying children of the cathedral, but that's Fallout 2,
right.
Or Fallout 1. Children of the whatever, I can't remember the name of it now. The transcendence based guys, and
Matthias's group.
Yeah, Matthias's group, and the so Hollywood keeps getting raided by the children of God or whatever. And I got there, and like someone's like, okay, well I can use some help with that, but first you have to straighten out my dominatrix. Go talk to her. I talked to her, like it was a speech check I couldn't do. So that was it. I ran out of being able to talk to her. I couldn't even talk to her again to try the speech check again if I gave myself points.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't get the quest to go take out God's Militia at that point. So I just ended up doing it. Like I needed to go get the zeolite, go get a quest thing.
Right.
But I wasn't, it's like I kept stumbling into the last part of the quest without getting the first part.
Yep.
And that's like really weirdly like unsatisfying.
Yeah, like mechanically and kind of history of how the game was developed, that the reason why I actually ended up looking up sort of the trail of how you had to do Hollywood quests, because in the very first version you luckily got to play after a couple patches, so
mm-hmm.
yours was a little more fixed, but not greatly. But I actually made sure I had the skills I needed and like followed a guide on which quests needed to go before the rest in order to do Hollywood, because it was so messed up.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, I'm pretty sure, is apparently when they did the open beta for backers, it only included Arizona. Once you got to the second half of the game, the beta ended.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, like, they didn't have all of the playtesters for, you know, making sure that skill levels actually made sense and that quests weren't all broken
yeah.
in California. So,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's when I knew I didn't play the beta because like why would you?
Exactly.
But I didn't know that's when it ended.
Yeah, I didn't know either until I was like, what the fuck is with California? Why is everything so broken?
Yeah, it's just super goof.
And that's why I actually warned you ahead of time. Like, this is where you actually need to go if everything breaks.
Yeah.
So.
And it's like, it ended up being fine. There's also like a weird, with the God's Militia, like, so you're going through the thing and you keep finding these people doing atrocities, you know, mm-hmm. and there's weird flagging. Like they were like, I walked into an execution they were going to hold and, I was like, oh, I can't let this happen. I can't just sit here and watch it. So I'm going to stop them. And then one of my party members threatened to quit because I killed somebody who was innocent. And I was like, that's not really what happened here at all. Like they were about to sacrifice this guy. And then when I got there, God's Militia like welcomed me in with open arms and wanted me to choose between like, do you want to join like the, you know, the big bad guy who you've been hearing damn you on radio broadcast, mm-hmm. the guys who are in charge of the executions or the torture master?
Yep.
And it was like, no, I don't want to do any of that. I just want to kill. I'm going to kill all these people.
Yep.
And then you just battle forever.
It's a lot of people.
Four trips back to town to sell stuff. Like in between, like I would kill people and then just like, okay, you guys wait here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and sell like 50 shotguns and then, you know, come back. But it just got silly. And I felt like there should have been a quest way to do that.
Yeah.
Like betraying everybody or blowing up the compound or something like that. Like,
There is to a certain extent, but it's not great. Like, essentially, the dominatrix proves to kind of be the only decent person in all of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a cool, like, sex-positive twist on things. Like, Fargo's proved himself to be, like, a super awesome kind of sex-positive and open-to-everybody type guy and tried to, I think, express some of that stuff in this game. Mm-hmm. But that was... you end up trying to like get her into a mayor position, and it turns out her biggest client is like one of the people from the church in secret.
It's the torture master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I don't know how, I guess he gets off on it or something. Like, he's not killing people, I guess. Is what the game is trying to
yeah,
say.
Yeah,
like,
that's the better. Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going on, but yeah, it's like the military or the people who kill innocents or the guy who just enjoys getting whipped and whipping other people himself.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. He's like the lessest of the evils, but still not a great dude. But anyway,
I couldn't find that out because when I got to her, like there was one skill check 8 that I just couldn't do to advance her quest. So like exactly. She wouldn't even talk to me. And then when I just got there, like I could join that guy, but when I'm in his room, he has people in cages that are begging to be let out.
And you don't get any of that. Yeah.
And I'm like, why would I do? Why would I join you? Like you're a piece of shit.
Exactly.
And I'm supposed to be a cop.
He's still pretty piece of shitty, I think, but he's just the lessest shitty and wants to make the church less militaristic and less like spreading of the gospel. Like if you want to be a churchgoer, you come to our church, not we come to you and force it upon you. So.
Yeah, which is slightly better, but like the game doesn't like that kind of gray morality is better in Fallout when you're a free agent.
Exactly.
Than it is when you're law enforcement.
Right. It's definitely like, you know, the same argument you can pose on, you know, I've heard. You tell me before, like, how Ultima is, you're the good guy in Ultima 7, and there's no moral ambiguity, so...
Yeah, well, there is, but you can't complete the game. Like, you can be an asshole, but that ruins the game for you. And specifically, Quest of the Avatar in Ultima 4.
Oh, okay.
I think there is a virtue system in 7, too. Just real quick, side note, like, the reason why Divinity opens up with a murder mystery, I think, is a reference to Ultima 7.
Oh, really?
Which I never realized until I started reading about Ultima 7, because I'm like, I tried to play it and I really couldn't.
The
race was not strong enough, but I was reading about it and I was like, oh, that's probably what Divinity is referencing. Like, that's probably a clever little, like, hey, you remember old CRPGs?
Right.
Like Ultima 7?
That's cool.
But yeah, so, like, let's talk about just a little bit, like, anything else in, like, any other specific hubs or quests or companions you want to talk about before we talk about the ending and what ultimately, because I think that actually redeemed a lot of the story for me.
Right.
When I was getting a little bit mad that like, okay, everyone's just an asshole and all of a sudden I'm supposed to have, I have to choose between cannibals and violent monsters, you know,
right.
When like in real life, I don't want anyone to get it. But the actual ending I thought was kind of clever and the villain speech at the end was pretty clever.
No, I think we've basically covered, other than the fact that there's more fetchy bullshit in that your plot when you get into California is we need to build better rad suits in order for you to, like, the radiation clouds in California shift and you're in the season where you can't access a certain area without stronger rad suits. Mm-hmm. You have to collect kitty litter, which the main ingredient in kitty litter that it can be used is zeolite. And so they're like, go collect kitty litter, and then you come across bags of zeolite and you're like, oh, sweet, like, I've scored. I don't even need like all the kitty litter. And they're like, no, we need kitty litter. And then after you do that, they're like, okay, to access this other area, we need zeolite. And you're like, you fucker.
Yeah, I have zeolite. Also, the kitty litter, the way you find that, that is fucking infuriating. Like, I ended up looking up a guide for that, because if you ask anybody about kitty litter, everyone just tells you this one guy, well, it has kitty litter. If you do a really, you can do 1,000 quests for him, and he's a monster, but I did him because I wanted his kitty litter. you do 1,000 quests for him, and he won't give it to you until you do this weird obscure thing that involves getting a random drop from a toaster, which is another just treasure box.
Game
with another. So there are actually 4 lockpicking skills.
You have to fix this fucking toaster. That's so dumb.
In a map that I think you can get locked out of. And then it's a really hard check. If you do that, you get his, and then he gives you 2 bags of kitty litter and you need 7. So all anyone will ever tell you about is they have, and then every once in a while, someone randomly gave me a kitty litter.
Yeah.
Like I complete a quest and it's like, I didn't get a chance to ask you about kitty litter. There's no reason for you to have kitty litter. Like, and then some kitty litter is just like on the ground in certain places. Like,
yep.
It's a real guide moment. And then I had 20 pounds of fucking zeolite. Like, and I had to like look up where all this kitty litter was. Like, that was when I was like closest to, like, I wasn't going to give up, but if I wasn't trying to play it for the show, I would have put it down for a while and just played like a bunch of, which I guess is what I did, just played a bunch of Isaac. But like, yep. I was really frustrated at that point.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. That's the one part that's definitely needed to be playtested and worked out better. Hopefully, you know, they seem to be dedicated to patching and kind of tweaking things. So hopefully it's a less rough experience for future players, I hope.
Like, literally all you need to do is, because these are people who are asking me for favors anyway, is just have, like, I ask them for kitty litter because that's why I'm there. Instead of, like, generic, like, is there any way I can help you? Which is, like, you just walk around and ask people that. People like, hey, I'm looking for some kitty litter. You can say, well, you need to help me steal a microscope to get the cure for this virus or this parasite. Cool. And then you'll give me kitty litter. Instead of like, when I ask you about kitty litter, you just say this other guy has it. Mm-hmm. And then when I complete this thing, you give me a fucking bag of it. You're holding out on the kitty litter for it's kitty litter. Like, there's no cats in this game.
Like, definitely, if they're gonna have kitty litter in there, they should have had some cats.
Yeah,
that was a little rough.
The and not just to like, you know, keep bringing up Divinity, even though they have a lot in common, but at some point you fight giant ghost cats in Divinity, and they do cat stuff. Their idle animations are like them licking their balls and like stretching out and stuff. It's great.
That's awesome.
It's super funny. But tell us a little bit about like what the ultimate big bad guy is and what the plot twist is and such.
Okay, so yeah, there's essentially kind of the two of the radio factions you're hearing about are Matthias, who wants to ascend humans via technology, and Dugan, who's a robot who wants to destroy all of humanity, and is basically telling humanity to turn themselves over and they have no chance. Mm-hmm. So you are essentially trying to eradicate one or both of them, because they're both scourges on people generally. Matthias tries to kind of play both sides a little bit, but you can, you know, for the most part, he's a bad guy. He keeps fighting you off in random encounters and stuff.
And you're getting, and he tries to frame you?
Yeah.
And then there's also a lot of you're getting evidence even in Arizona that he, so like a robot, like a Dugan robot is who killed your buddy, but then you run into somebody who is a part of Matthias's cult who's like operating on a girl against her will.
Yep.
And that's a really hard quest to complete without fucking it up, but not because it's broken, just because it's difficult. But so you know he's a bad guy, even though he's saying like this is transcendence and it's a good thing.
Right. So you end up going to where Dugan's stuff is, like his radio signals are centralized, which kind of in a Fallout-ish moment is right below where your outpost is.
Yeah, but separated by that radiation wall.
Right.
As opposed to just like power armor random encounters.
Yep. And then there's, you know, you get there and essentially there's a big reveal of Dugan and Matthias essentially being a single agent. Mm-hmm. And then there's some dialogue and a huge combat. So give us the details on what's said.
Like the idea just being that they were playing both sides against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like they were both kind of part of this AI that is the AI that ran the base that the original Wasteland Rangers took over.
Yep.
So probably huge for people who played Wasteland 1. Like I've never managed to get very far in it, but probably super cool. But they were just like, you know, they were setting up a villain. Like, it was essentially like, you know, if you're setting up a religion, you need to have a god, but then you also have to have a Satan, you know, to scare people towards God. And that's what, you know, so the one guy who was the Dugan was scaring the people to make them want to be stronger to accept this transcendence movement. So that was really cool.
And they're both, you know, they're both agents of trying to ascend the AI and bring him back so he can take over and destroy essentially the Rangers for fucking up his original base in the original Wasteland.
Yep. And Matthias just wants this kind of power, but he ends up getting used and taken over by the AI that ultimately wants to do that. So you just do kind of a series of long fights and boss fights, which again, like, you know, if you look back at the source or the inspiration, not really the inspiration, like the inspiration's Wasteland 1, which I don't know that much about, but like how cool it is in Fallout 1 and 2, where you can talk your way out of the endings. I was trying to figure out if you could, because there were some dialogue options I couldn't do with the end. Do you know if it's possible to like talk the bad guy into quitting or something?
I don't think you can actually talk your way out of the last combat.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but I'm fairly certain I had all my talkie skills up, and you might be able to like gain yourself some advantages, but I don't think you can actually avoid the fight altogether.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say a couple neat things about the last combat though. Did you have I forget his name, but did you get the NPC that you can get from the area where you have to save that girl from the Matthias guy?
Yeah. Yeah, the two lesbians.
Did you have the like robotic NPC from that area?
Oh, Luxa Carnium. I did have him, but he didn't come with me.
Okay, so there's that guy, and then there's also what's his name?
Luxa Carnium or Luxa Carnium?
Yeah, something of that sort. And then there's also Rose, who, like I said, had that replacement arm. When the AI is deployed, and kind of, you know, turns all of the people who are working there against you, and the big combat starts, both of those characters will be turned against you.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's awesome. Like, I had Rose throughout the whole game. She was a huge, like, fighter for me and, like, had some good firepower. And then she just turns against the whole party because the AI took her over via the arm.
Wow, that's interesting. That would be really hard.
Yeah.
Like, losing two people. Like, I used Luxa Carnium for a while, and he just got replaced.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I had him and replaced him. So he wasn't in the last fight with me, but I've heard that he is also taken over in the same way Rose is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Really neat.
Yeah. The another interesting thing is all of the kind of side questing. So instead of doing this kind of big talky battle, they kind of show you the weight of all the good you've done, because everybody who you've helped out like sends kind of a helper like to help you in these final battles. And these last battles are huge. Like, they are big battles on a scale that Fallout hasn't done.
Yes.
You know, where you have eight people or seven people you control, and then there are seven or eight people who are NPCs versus, you know, as many bad guys. And like, it all moves pretty quick and works pretty well. And they're not useless. So like, I was expecting them to be like the monk who just ran off and got killed immediately. But instead, like, it was all like pretty, there were these cool like lesbian mechanics in the robot town. And then the Diamondback Militia guy came, and most of them survived till the end.
Yeah.
For me.
For me, I like essentially on the very last map had one half of the map was my team against the bad guys, and the other half was AI against the bad guys.
Hmm.
And like they were pulling their weight, man. They managed to take down nearly the whole side before I was able to go help them out. So
yeah, that was really cool.
It is a pretty cool ending. And then you get once you defeat them, you attempt to kind of shut down everything and make sure that AI doesn't spread. It's kind of I think vaguely purposely left open that the AI probably isn't completely stopped. Like, you managed to stop the local spread, but that there might be implications beyond just the area you're in. And then and then you get essentially a Fallout. Oh, by the way, we didn't mention. I forgot kind of the big twist here too, is that this all doesn't take place like at Dugan's place. When you get to Dugan's place, he's flying over to Ranger Center, where the AI has been being raised the entire time.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So the last fight takes place at your headquarters, the Ranger Citadel that you've been at for the entire first half of the game.
With all those dead Kickstarter backers, I presume, on the ground, like all the random names that are. Yeah, definitely people who paid like $500 on Kickstarter to get their name in the game.
Exactly. And then you get a very Fallout-esque slideshow of your completion and results of what happens to all the areas based on your actions within them, which is pretty well done. I enjoyed it. You know, it's exactly as enjoyable as it is in Fallout, where you can be like, oh, cool, I did do all the good in that area, so I did get the good ending. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is it's pretty satisfying. Even though, like, as soon as you do that big battle, you literally just go upstairs and set off a nuke, which, like, somebody has to stay behind, or you can just say fuck it and everybody blows up.
Yeah.
I didn't do the fuck it, everybody blows up. And then it's kind of funny. You can't sacrifice yourself. The main ranger Vargas has to do it.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, sir. And I was like, why can't I thought I would be able to leave somebody to do it. But sadly, I could not, because I had a real shithead. Like this heavy weapons guy who was like kept saying "Hail Satan" and stuff before fights, and I kept losing control of him. Like, kept joined me, like, and he was a heavy weapons guy, so I took him because I wanted that, and I was gonna leave him behind because he would think it was metal and it'd be, you know, I didn't care about him. And then in his ending slideshow, he thought he was so badass after the last battle, he went off on his own and immediately got killed. It's like what his ending slide says.
So that's really good.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, that's mostly Wasteland 2. Yeah. It is really cool. Like, it is a fun journey. And if you are the kind of person who likes those games, like, it's for you. Like, yeah, this is that.
It's definitely, if you liked the original two Fallouts, you'll like Wasteland 2. Like, it's pretty solid. More fighty and less dialogue-y. That's pretty much the only trade-off you have to make.
Yep.
And the fact that it's a little rough around the edges, but so are those games. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is a very long episode for Comrade Lake, but... Mm-hmm. But I might be a little rough with the editing, so I apologize for that.
Yeah.
But we will see you again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Where we will be definitely doing Isaac, because it's all we're obsessed with right now.
Yeah, and that's going to be another, you know,
another long episode
about Isaac, because that's, between the two of them, I put like 100 hours into both of them. It's ridiculous.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yep.
And we'll catch you next time.